Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found, but...
Oh, yeah. We started to burn too many things we found. That's the magnificent, gorgeous, and wonderful Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, B-E-R-N-Z, on the Grammy-winning Tomorrow's Children album from Appleseed Records. This is Harvey Wasserman back for you. Another day, another hour, another time in Solartopia. Glad to be with you. We got a lot to cover today, many different things. Kevin Kams is going to join us from Beyond Nuclear to talk about this new report that's come out from the idiot Rick Perry at the Department of Energy, talking about how wonderful how bad wind and solar are and how wonderful nukes and coal are. But we all have amazing news from the state of Ohio. The governor, John Kasich, Republican governor there, has come out against the bailout for the Perry and Davis Pepsi plant. So we're going to be talking about that later. Kevin Kams is going to join us. We're also hoping for a call from Rush. If he can be announced, he's in transit. And this is a guy who took some amazing photographs in Charlottesville and also almost got killed doing it. So hopefully he'll call in announcing himself. He's on the road and in difficult circumstances to reach. When he calls in, we'll start talking about that. He will tell us how to look up these photographs online. They're quite amazing. And while he was pointing a camera at someone, that person was pointing a gun at him. And fortunately, only he shot and not the guy with the gun. We're going to start with my buddy Bob Petrakis, co-conspirator for so many years. Bob is having a paper published and about election theft. Bob, you with us?
I'm here, Harvey.
All right. Well, you're in Columbus, Ohio, where you and I have co-conspired for the last three decades, but I am now in Southern California. Having just come back, by the way, I just came back. I took my girls to the Sequoia National Park, and only to read that Trump and his fascist minions want to put it on the chopping block. I sat for a full 4 hours yesterday in front of the biggest living creature on Earth, which is the giant General Sherman Sequoia tree. It is, by volume and by weight, the biggest living creature on this planet. It is quite astounding. I sat there for 4 hours while my daughters went hiking, and I have to say I was astounded. I saw several thousand people come, several hundred anyway, come to see the tree, and at least half of them were European. I heard every European language and Russian spoken there, but not so much English. About a quarter were also Asian, mostly Chinese and Japanese. It was a quite amazing experience, and if you ever get the chance to go to Sequoia National Forest, absolutely do it. It is just an astonishing place. Bob, you are now having a paper published, a major academic paper published on election integrity. It's a big event, actually, because the academic professions have been quite astute in avoiding this issue. Tell us the circumstances and the nature of your paper, if you would.
Oh, there's it's with the American Political Science Association. I'm presenting it there, and there's a couple different places that are interested, actually, in a book. Hopefully you'll co-write with me. But not really. It's the history of electronic or computer voting in the United States, and goes into more detail many things we had in our books as paragraphs or bullet points. It goes into kind of footnoting it and into more detail regarding, for example, that we know that there was problems since the 64 election with the use of mainframe computers, that you know, Roy Salt, who used to work with Bureau of Standards, wrote repeatedly in the 70s and 80s that computers should not be used for counting votes. So that's it in the beginning, and then we go through the history of how a small handful of people who primarily were Republican operatives set up and really kind of sold this program to the nation. Is that, you know, they sold it and they were there waiting. After the punch card disaster in Florida, they were able to say, let's go with these shiny new computers. And so it traces this small group. And companies, you know, like Diebold, which went out of business for a pattern of worldwide fraud. So that's what we're looking at there, and where we are now with people obsessed with the Russians, but missing the fact that private for-profit partisan corporations secretly control everything electronically, from the databases to the firmware codes, to the central tabulator computer software.
Wow. So the first use of modern computer technology to steal elections was started in 1964. And what was Roy Salt?
Well, we don't know whether they used it then, but we know that they were warned not to use it then. In the 64 elections, there was some use of mainframe computers. The few that were available to tabulate the vote. And at one point in 1984, Ronald Reagan actually issues a national security directive when he learns that, you know, one computer tabulated about a third of all the, one mainframe, a third of all the votes in America. So they've been looking at this for a long period of time. They knew it was insecure, and they really did nothing to include it in the critical infrastructure.
Well, they wanted it to be insecure. I mean, that's how we wound up with Donald Trump.
You could draw that conclusion. You know, the these private operatives, and many of them with close ties, you know, to the intelligence agencies, and also the clear use of computers, particularly in this century, in the 21st century, what appears to manipulate elections overseas.
Well, now, the CIA was doing the overseas election. Where did they start using? Is there a landmark moment where they started using electronic voting machines in foreign countries to flip elections?
Well, you've got these institutions that were slowly built up. And it's really hard to say, because there was old-fashioned election rigging, you know, dating back to, you know, 1948 in Italy, and the CIA bragged that they got Duarte out of jail to replace blowtorch Bob d'Aubuisson, the fascist, in El Salvador in the 1980s. But increasingly, it's after the 2000 election, going into the 2004 American election, you'll see it's the same companies, a lot of the same technicians, people like Mike Connell, who we wrote about, who died suspiciously, those people that we suspect of setting up the technology to steal the vote in Ohio in 2004, were heavily involved in bringing computer technology overseas. And remember the one case that got a lot of attention when Ms. Bhutto, running for prime minister, coming back in an attempt, was assassinated the very day she was supposed to meet with the late Senator Alan Spector and Representative Pat Kennedy about what she said was the computer manipulation, the electronic manipulation of the voting rolls in Pakistan.
Wow, that's Benazir Bhutto. And so she was going to meet with our inspector and Patrick Kennedy and talk about
the day she was assassinated. That was that's been confirmed. That was on her agenda. She was going to complain about the use of the databases. A lot of people look at the obviously it's important to look at them, but the central tabulators. But equally important is, of course, the people that manage the poll books, the voter registration books and those databases. You may have seen just recently in the paper that Secretary of State Kobach in Kansas essentially threw out three times as many ballots as per capita as any other state in the country. And all of that was done with his database, which involves, of course, the use of computers.
Well, you and I have a piece in the hopper about the responsibility of Al Gore, John Kerry, and Hillary Clinton in putting Donald Trump in the White House by refusing to face any of these issues. And, you know, we finally saw Al Gore on Bill Maher courageously advocating the abolition of the Electoral College only a mere 16 years after, you know, the 2000 election was stolen. But, you know, the Democratic Party is obviously doing nothing about this. We're starting to hear a lot of complaints about disenfranchisement, but it's amazing how none of the major politicians and none of the corporate bloviators will touch electronic voting machines. I mean, yours must be one of the very first academic papers being published about this issue.
Yeah, it's much in vogue thanks to the Russians. So there's actually a panel on cybersecurity
at the
at the American Political Science Association. I think it was much easier for the political scientists to just assume, like everyone else, that the numbers are correct and not questioning them. It makes your life easier than developing into, you know, a detective instead of a political scientist. But I'm hoping now there's going to be many of them that are, in fact, forensic detectives and are going to look at, you know, the problems when the actual vote count makes no sense when compared to particularly the exit polls. As you know, I sued Edison Research Group nationwide. I filed a suit in federal court in Ohio. And what I argued was that they're colluding with the Secretary of State in various states. If, regardless of what your polls say, you're going to accept the real numbers, no matter how implausible, and you're going to adjust all of your polls to make them right, then you're colluding, and that you should be considered a state actor, and you should be held accountable for putting out what appears to be improbable, if not fraudulent, data.
Well, you mentioned the Russians, and, you know, there's a big debate on the left of whether this whole Russian thing is, to coin a phrase, a red herring, or a formerly red herring. What do you think? I mean, having looked at all this hacking that we know is possible and indeed going on, is it worth even discussing the Russians, or is it all just domestic?
Well, you know, we don't know. I mean, that's the key point is, yeah, maybe other state actors, China, Russia, may have been involved. But, there's a way to solve that problem. You need paper in every machine that can be not only voted but recounted. And you got to make sure that there's no computer code that isn't open source and fully examined. So, I mean, the Russian problem isn't the obvious problem. The obvious problem are these private, partisan, for-profit U.S. corporations who have the keys to the kingdom that can program whatever outcomes they want. So the value of the Russian debate is to simply expose a massively vulnerable system, one which, you know, only took people a few minutes, the hackers at DEFCON, just a few minutes to hack every single voting machine. And we already knew this based on the top-to-bottom review by Deborah Bowen in California and the top-to-bottom security review of the electronic election systems in Ohio as well by Jennifer Bruner, who was then Secretary of State. So we've known this stuff for a long time. So the only purpose the Russian speculation serves is to correct the obvious problem domestically in the U.S., because the system was set up basically not to be hacked, which is easy enough, but to be pre-programmed by partisan companies.
Talking with Bob Fitrakis, my co-conspirator for 3 decades on many things, including the hacking and flipping and stripping of American elections, our most recent book, our summary book, really, The Flip of Strip and Flip Disaster of America's Stolen Elections, culminating, of course, in the illegitimate so-called presidency with an asterisk of the lunatic Donald Trump, and our piece pending in the hopper ascribing the blame for Trump's ascendancy or descendancy on the Democrats for refusing to raise this issue at all. We are indeed, and I take you and I think, and Greg Palast, John Simon, Bev Harris, Mimi Kennedy, and a few others can take serious credit for this. We are starting to see a national dialogue on disenfranchisement, which Trump has lifted to a new level with Kris Kobach and Ken Blackwell in his cabinet level position, almost of secretaries of stripping the vote count, but stripping the voter rolls. But we still see no mainstream discussion of the electronic voting machines. I mean, are you seeing it pop up anywhere in the major media?
Well, there's some discussion as there's been before. I mean, Forbes did a good job, particularly in 2012, Daily Investment News, Wired. Some of the tech companies, Computer World, Wired, have done a very good job at looking at this. But it's still, unless you're speaking about Russians doing it, isn't being discussed by the mainstream for-profit media in the U.S.
Well, it's astounding. I mean, it just makes a total mockery of our entire system. So when are you delivering this paper, Bob? And are you going to wear a raincoat for being showered by vegetables from all these uptight political scientists?
Well, the paper I'll be giving in San Francisco on Thursday, and that will be in the afternoon. Also on Wednesday, there's an election integrity panel being put on by Pepper Norris of Harvard, which, of course, you were invited to. Pepper Norris, the Harvard Project that does the study of the leading democracies and in the world, and rated the U.S. 47 out of 47 among the longstanding democracy, raising the slogan, "Why not the worst?"
Well, it's good to see our ratings are consistent with our moral stature in the world, based on the current president, and with an asterisk. How do you say? I guess you have to say president with an asterisk. I don't think anybody should be referring to this guy. This guy, he seems to have a reverse learning curve. I mean, he keeps getting worse and worse. It's astounding. Okay, well, we're gonna talk in a minute. Kevin Camps, have you joined us yet? Oh, Kevin. Okay, Kevin's not on yet, which is fine, because that gives us a little
time. Harvey. I was on mute.
Oh, you are there. Okay, Kevin.
Yeah.
We're going to segue in, and Bob is going to stay on. We're going to segue into a discussion of this new report from the Perry Perry-led Department of Energy. But I have to, in keeping current, and we're waiting for, I think it's Russ to call about his near-death experience in Charlottesville. Russ, are you on the phone? Okay, he's a photographer. I don't know if he's going to make it onto this show. So, but I want to make sure we cover what's really important. And since we have three guys, which constitutes the locker room here, I want to talk about Colin Kaepernick and what's happening in the NFL. You know, Colin Kaepernick, who is a top level or certainly a B plus quarterback, he did go to one Super Bowl, which he almost won. He's an excellent all around passer and runner. He's had some hard times lately. His stats weren't so great, but he's certainly in the upper third of all NFL quarterbacks, National Football League quarterbacks. And he opted out of his contract with the San Francisco 49ers. Didn't like it. The franchise is in great turmoil and opted to jump into the free agent market and has yet to be picked up by any NFL team, despite the fact that he's far superior to at least, you know, seven or eight of the quarterbacks that have been hired by NFL teams, including Jay Cutler, who's really been a loser his whole career with the Chicago Bears, and they picked him up in Miami even though he had tried to retire. Now, nobody will hire Colin Kaepernick, even though, because, of course, he refused to stand for the national anthem during the last season. He said he's going to stand this year. But protests are spreading all over the NFL, which is really fantastic. And it's finally spread this past week to white players. All the players who've been protesting have been black. Finally, two whites joined, and to the Cleveland Browns. As my fellow, well, maybe I'm a former Ohioan, Bob, what do you think about this finally coming to the Cleveland Browns?
Well, you know, obviously a positive sign, and I think to some extent, great time to take a stand because of Donald Trump taking a obvious stand of the moral equivalency of genocidal fascist forces with people seeking to oppose them. So that becomes very important. And the worst thing, I just wish people would actually read the lyrics to the national anthem. I mean, it was, you know, written by a guy who was pro-slavery. He was writing about perpetuating that institution in the verses of the national anthem. Again, I mean, not only is it bombastic, which, you know, and was added much later in the 20th century, and many have long argued that what you really needed, you know, was something like America the Beautiful or, of course, This Land is Your Land. So, you know, I think anyone who intelligently reflects on the lyrics would wonder why it would be our national anthem.
Well, that's a great idea. I hadn't thought of that. I think we should start a campaign to change the national anthem. And I think This Land is Your Land is a great choice. I really like that. But we have seen now Marshawn Lynch, a premier running back, who should have gotten the ball at the end of the Super Bowl when the Seahawks were about to beat the Patriots, and didn't, and they threw an interception instead, handing Bill Belichick an improbable Super Bowl. He has said that he will protest. He's been picked up by the Oakland Raiders, and he's going to protest, and now it's really spread. Kevin, are you in touch with the NFL at all? Is this anything that interests you?
Yeah. No, I mean, I was very disappointed when Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg criticized Kaepernick for his, you know, noble action. And it's great to see that more and more, you know, even superstars, but athletes across the board, not just NFL, but in other sports and all the way down to, you know, a story. Dave Zirin, the Wobbly sportscaster, is somebody I hear from time to time. So he's the one who keeps me up to date on these developments. But I just wanted to share a quick story. I won't name any names because I don't have their permission to, but I heard from a friend in the Toledo area that her son, who was going to a liberal arts college in Minnesota, played for the football team. They were practicing on a, you know, a a field pretty far away from the main field, and there was a game going on, and the national anthem struck up at the game, and the coach demanded that his practicing team fields away, you know, take their helmets off and put their hand on their heart, and he wouldn't do it. And he got kicked off the team. And so there was, you know, that was the end of that. He never got justice. It just shows how absurd this is. And I remember back to my own high school days when German exchange students who I was friends with would ask me, what's up with this national anthem stuff? You know, they were kind of cured by the whole Nazi experience, I guess. So, yeah.
Well, gratefully, the ratings for the NFL plummeted last year. And some of them are blaming it on the politicization of the game. I mean, how can you complain about the politicization of the NFL when they have the military flying over all these games, and the military is all over the NFL, and they claim that's not political, but guys protesting the national anthem, somehow that interjects politics into the game. It's ridiculous. I do want to hand it to LeBron James and Kobe and a few other NBA athletes who wore, I think, what was the one they wore? Was it Black Lives Matter or, oh, I Can't Breathe. LeBron wore an I Can't Breathe t-shirt. I thought that was really cool. And, you know, personally, I hate the NFL, and I think they're about to take a major hit, and not because of the national anthem, but because of concussions. I mean, this whole story of what's happened to these guys who play football. I mean, your friend Kevin, who got kicked off the team, should be grateful that, you know, probably saved his knees, saved his brain from getting out of football.
Yeah, I just saw a Washington Post article, I think it was today, reporting on the demise of younger and younger football leagues, which, like you're saying, is probably a good thing for the future health of those kids.
Oh, absolutely. I predict, and people laugh at me, but I think that in 10 years, soccer in the United States will be a bigger game than football. Maybe 20, but I think the American football is doomed. And I want to put up the... Yeah. The soccer, you know, it takes some getting used to, I guess. I just went to the soccer game in Columbus. They played, I took my girls, and there was a team from Germany they played. And, you know, it is definitely slow. I mean, there was one goal in 90 minutes of action, and it was a beautiful thing to see. But, God, that really takes a while, I got to say. The great thing about it, though, is it goes 45 straight minutes without breaking for commercials or any of that other stuff. I mean, that's really a nice piece of work that you can just
a lot
there
of running.
Be...
I mean, what's the figure for midfielders? They run 10 miles per game, something like that.
Really? Is that what happens?
Yeah,
wow.
up and down, and you add it up. Yep.
Well, I want to add, by the way, before we leave this topic, I think the poster child for American football is O.J. Simpson. I mean, whoever he might have been as a moral being, this guy was hit in the head starting probably in junior high, 10,000, 20,000 times? I mean, how many times did he run the ball for the Bills and the 49ers, you know? I mean, to expect any kind of sanity for a guy who can stand up there after all those years in prison and having killed two people and say that his life, what did he say his life was? Conflict-free. He said he had a conflict-free life. If that isn't getting hit in the head in the game of football, God knows how many times, I don't know what it is. So I want to express my support for Colin Kaepernick. I was going to go buy a Kaepernick jersey from the 49ers, but I'm going to wait until he settles with a team. I hope one picks him up. And I hope it's the Green Bay Packers, because they're public-owned, and they have who I consider the greatest quarterback in football, much better than Tom Brady would be Aaron Rodgers. And by the way, the Browns, who are protesting, are starting a rookie quarterback when they could have picked up Colin Kaepernick. I don't know. Bob, what do you got to say about that?
Well, I think your point on the military involvement in the NFL and the revelations that they actually pay, if the government pays to do those flyovers and those military maneuvers is very important. I mean, the obvious thing, of the 32 quarterbacks in the league, the lowest that, you know, people would rate Kaepernick is 17th. So the fact that he can't even get signed as a backup quarterback, which would make him one of the 64 best quarterbacks, is really telling to the extent that he is being blacklisted. And again, these are people that don't seem to understand the First Amendment. And again, they need to read the lyrics and realize that, you know, Francis Scott Key was a racist and was, in fact, a man who supported the institution of slavery.
I agree with you 100%. I think you and I should, one of our next pieces should be demanding that we change the national anthem. I think that's a really good idea. And also, by the way, I like one thing that's happening that I like, and of course I'm from Boston and a genetic Red Sox fan, is that they want to change the street right next to Fenway Park in Boston. It's called Yawkey Way, Yawkey. And Tom Yawkey was the owner of the Red Sox. He was, you know, a country gentleman and all this stuff. He was also the last owner to hire a black ball player. And it was really a known racist. And the current owner of the Red Sox, John Henry, is involved. I mean, he's supportive of a move to change the name of that street. And I hope they do. I mean, that's a mile from where I was born. And I have my own nomination, which is Ortiz Avenue. You know, they should name it after David Ortiz, the great Caribbean slugger who was just such a pinnacle of showmanship and integrity. Kevin, you got any pet sports peeves you want to air here?
Well, I'm a Tiger fan, so, you know, it pains me to hear all this praising of the Red Sox, but, you know, I'll go with it. No, I like your proposal there. That sounds very appropriate.
And Bob is also a Tigers fan. You guys are Michiganders there, so you're both Tigers.
Yeah, I'm a Tiger fan myself. I'm really worried about Miguel Cabrera. So, one of the greatest hitters of all time. He seems to have lost his stroke this season due to a bad back in the World Game. So he's an internationalist, and he's paid the price for it.
Yeah. All right, you guys. Well, we'll come back to sports. Maybe we'll run a full show on the Tigers and let you guys vent your pain. I have to say, you know, the Red Sox have won 3 World Series in the last, 10, 15 years, and they're leading the division now. So, and I got to say, all things aside, my definition of a good day, no matter what else happens in the world, is when the Red Sox win and the Yankees lose. So there you go. That sets the tone. All right, let's move on now. This is an important time to be discussing energy. A major report has come out and has major Ohio implications. And, Bob, stay with us, if you will, from Rick Perry's so-called Department of Energy. Rick Perry has distinguished himself probably as one of the dumbest cabinet secretaries in the history of the United States. He was labeled perfectly by Molly Ivins, the wonderful Texas columnist, as Governor Goodhair when he was in charge of Texas. And we have a major fight going on in Ohio. So I want to start with this, and then we'll go to talk about the national situation. But in Ohio, we have 2 decrepit Fukushimas in progress, Perry and Dave Espessi, the 2 nuclear plants, the mistakes by the lake. And the governor of Ohio, John Kasich, has now come out against the major bailout that's being proposed. Bob, you want to talk about a bit about that? Bob, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry,
yeah, so,
I accidentally hit the mute. I heard it. Our budget hawk, and he is a budget hawk. I remember it was Kasich who cut the deal with Clinton that actually balanced the budget. I had the misfortune of running against Mr. Kasich for Congress in 1992 as a Democrat, but he's a maverick, and he is actually fact-based. He likes dollars and cents. So it's really hard to understand why anyone's on the other side. If you look at the cost of renewables, and Bloomberg News has been good on this for, you know, for so long, it's hard to imagine that anyone would want these massive subsidies for, you know, the worst form of polluting energy.
So in the national picture, Kevin Camps, what do you see? What do you think the significance is of John Kasich opposing this $4.5 billion proposed bailout for these two reactors on the lake? Do you think it's going to result in their shutdown? And how does it fit in the bigger picture?
Yeah, kind of like Bob just said, it's kind of welcome that somebody like Kasich would actually apply some other values besides bailing out massively these, you know, already filthy rich corporations, at least in terms of how much their CEOs and higher executives and shareholders get paid for these, you know, bad economic decisions they've been making for years and decades. So I really welcome that, because the Ohio state legislature is still playing around with the idea of going through with it. You know, there was just some coverage by Midwest Energy News about a week ago that, you know, quoted several Ohio state senators and legislators, representatives, saying, yeah, we're still trying to figure out how to do this. And this attempted bailout in Ohio, like you said, to the tune of several billion dollars on folks' electricity bills, has been going on for over 3 years. So they just keep trying. They've got, you know, they've got a lot of traction at the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio. So I think the fight is still on, and very much welcome Kasich's position, because it is, Ohio is, you know, a poster child for this fight, but it's going on everywhere. And thanks to Tim Judson at Nuclear Information and Resource Service, we have a figure for how bad this could be if all of the nuclear utilities get away with what's already gone down in New York and Illinois. We're looking at a $280 billion subsidy from electric ratepayers to these nuclear utilities to prop up these old reactors, which are becoming dangerously age degraded at this point, and perhaps none worse in the country than Davis Bessie in that regard.
Well, let's do the specifics here. The First Energy, which owns Perry and Davis Bessie as well as Beaver Valley in Pennsylvania, wants $300 million. I mean, you know, you can't even say this stuff without total incredulity. They want $300 million a year in subsidies to continue operating Perry and Davis Bessie, these two ridiculously decrepit reactors up on the lake. And they can't compete, obviously. Now, one thing Kasich has done, which I'm not happy about, is he has come out, this is the governor of Ohio, has come out and he opposes this $300 million handout, but he is wanting a $500 million natural gas facility built near Davis Bessie, which he correctly says will be far cheaper, although we don't know what's going to happen to gas prices in the long term. And he has generously characterized the nuclear plants as being obsolete and, creatures of a bygone era. And he's posited the gas burner as the technology of the future. But he hasn't talked about wind at all. And that's a serious problem for us. I mean, he's pushing another fossil fuel, arguably maybe a better fossil fuel than coal and certainly better than nuclear, but I'm not happy he's pushing a gas burner.
Well, I mean, I would just point out that, the sabotage of wind in Ohio is one of the bigger scandals going on in the entire energy picture nationwide. I mean, it's got competition, the sabotage of solar in various places like Nevada at one point, Florida still as we speak. And then, you know, we anti-nuke activists are no fans of fracking by any means. I mean, it's a Faustian bargain. You're trading groundwater, which is drinking water, for energy. Essentially, you're poisoning the groundwater of this continent with fracking activities. And there is a radioactive price to be paid. The fracking wastewater streams are radioactive. And I attended a rally in Port Huron, Michigan this past Sunday against the Canadian nuclear waste dump on the Lake Huron shore and other related issues. And there was a speaker from Detroit describing some good news from Detroit that U.S. ecology has been stopped for the time being from importing radioactive fracking wastewater into essentially the downtown Metro Detroit area. Hamtramck looks like you can reach out and touch downtown from there. And these U.S. ecology fracking wastewater processing facilities have been set up with windsocks to see where the radioactive gases would blow to. That is the price tag attached to fracking. So as you pointed out in Solartopia, Harvey, the way to go is efficiency and renewables. We got to get away from all these dirty, dangerous, and expensive fossil fuel and nuclear industries.
Well, let's talk about wind in Ohio, and then we want to talk about this national report that Rick Perry has come out with. The wind regime in Ohio, in northern Ohio, is one of the best in the world. And I had a piece about this at progressive.org on their website. It's flat up there. The farmers really want wind for a number of reasons. I mean, economic reasons. If you're a farmer and you own, a 1,000 acres of land, you can put up a whole bunch of windmills, and each windmill and they're spaced apart. I think it's 8 tower lengths apart, and they're 300 feet up to now. They got up to 300 feet for towers now, and you lose an acre of land. That's it. The footprint of a windmill is very, very small, and you can farm right up to the edge of the windmill's footprint there. And so we got all these farmers in northern Ohio want these windmills. It's flat. There's a lot of transmission wires there, which is a big deal. You know, the ideal wind in the United States is out in the lakes, and it's in the Great Plains, in Minnesota, the Dakotas, down through Kansas, Nebraska, to West Texas. But there's no transmission lines. You got to build transmission lines, and they're far away from the urban areas. Whereas in Ohio, northern Ohio, the wind sites are very close to Toledo and Cleveland and Ashtabula along the lake there. And you got the lines, you got the roads to bring in the windmills. I mean, it's perfectly set up for wind. And there is one sentence. It's astounding. It's the most expensive sentence in human history. One sentence in the which was slipped into the budget, and Kasich did let this through, by the way. I think he regrets it, but he let through this sentence requiring a 1,300-foot, basically, setback from roads and other buildings for wind towers, which is absolutely insane. And it is literally stopping $4.5 billion. That's $4.5 billion worth of wind development in northern Ohio with thousands of jobs. And it's all just sitting there. And it's a lot of this stuff has been pre-approved. The money is there. The corporations are waiting to build these wind farms, and they can't move ahead because of this one sentence in the Ohio budget. Bob, have you seen that at all? Have you followed that at all in the Ohio legislature?
Yeah, and what's interesting is the far-right Republican legislative body is in rebellion against Kasich, and it looks like they're going to override about 4 of his vetoes. So if you look, the other factor, as good as Kasich has been at trying to halt the subsidies, and just as bad on fracking, Ohio is the heart of all the waste dumping. I got a helicopter coming over here in the neighborhood. But, yeah, so this is the great state for bringing your fracking radioactive toxic water and dumping it. But
To segue back to your previous issue, Bob, the Ohio legislature, which has Republican right-wing supermajorities, is in a Democratic state. And all these guys are in power because of electronic voting machines.
And some of the most imaginative gerrymandering allowed under law. I mean, you've got a situation where It's a swing state. It should be 50-50. We have 16 U.S. representatives. So instead of it being 8-8, it's 12 Republicans and 4 Democrats.
It's totally corrupt. And all the problems we're having now with wind and these nukes in Ohio stems straight from your original exposition on election theft. I mean, if we had fair elections in Ohio, as you say, the legislature and the congressional delegation would be roughly 50-50. And, and it's just in 2012, when Obama reelected, with a strong Democratic majority, and Sherrod Brown was reelected as U.S. Senator with a strong Democratic majority, the Republicans still got two-thirds of the state house. And the governorship. It's insane. It's unbelievable. So, Kevin, let's talk now on the national level. Tell us about this report that's just come out from the brain-dead Rick Perry Energy Department.
Yeah, Rick Perry ordered this report back in April, and it just came out this morning. And there's been a couple articles, one in the Washington Post, one in the New York Times, that I've happened to catch today. What he asked for was a report on resilience and reliability and affordability with the U.S. electric grid. And I haven't read the whole report. I've scanned it, and I've looked at the articles. And what it looks like is he didn't get everything he wanted, which was a complete repudiation of wind and solar. What he did get, though, is a big step in the direction that he wanted, which is laying the groundwork for the preservation of coal and nuclear power in this country, trying to, stem the losses of coal plants and nuclear plants. And apparently the staff at DOE have blamed the low prices of natural gas, fracked natural gas, as the main culprit for why nuclear and coal has been shutting down, because it can't compete. And so what they're trying to do is lay the groundwork for new forms of subsidies. And the quotes from the Nuclear Energy Institute and nuclear utility lobbyists in these articles I read today included things like nuclear has to be rewarded for its virtuous attributes, the benefits it gives to society. And it's just, it's all public relations garbage. So I actually wrote a letter to the editor back to the Washington Post pointing out some of the virtuous benefits of things like solar and wind and efficiency, such as the fact that it doesn't generate forever deadly radioactive waste. It doesn't lead to nuclear weapons proliferation risks. It doesn't risk Fukushima-scale meltdowns and catastrophic radioactivity releases. And those ideas I should attribute to Dave Kraft at Nuclear Energy Information Service in Chicago, who's been fighting this kind of insanity for years. And I mentioned earlier that Illinois was one of two states so far that have gone so far as to bail out their old reactors to the tune of $2.35 billion over the next 10 years. So it's almost a similar figure to Ohio's proposal. So in Illinois, it's $235 million a year for 10 years that folks are going to be paying on their electricity bills to prop up the old reactors, and you'd think they'd use some of that money for maintenance and safety repairs. They don't. All they're doing is padding the profit margin and, paying the bonuses of the executives. That's where that money goes.
God, it's just so infuriating. It's unbelievable. I mean, the New York Times today ran a piece saying that China, in the last 2 months, China has installed more than the equivalent of more than 20% of all American solar energy in the last 2 months. And that they are just exploding with solar over there. And we're just mired in the prehistoric mud of coal, oil, nukes, and gas. It's utterly insane. And I saw somewhere Trump was ranting about a solar trade war with China. I mean, I assume that he's going to do everything he can to kill the American solar energy industry. And, and just as Ohio, with a single sentence, has been stomping on the wind industry up there, $4.5 billion worth of investment being stuck by one sentence in a legislature put into power by fraudulent electronic voting machines, starting with, of course, Diebold, which Bob exposed thanks to the famous Walden-Odell letter back in 2004, Bob, when and Wally Odell talked about delivering? Yeah, 2004.
2004, sure.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a terrible death spiral that we're looking at here, how a rigged electronic voting machines lead to a rigged legislature and a brain-dead Secretary of Energy that are killing the Earth with coal, oil, nukes, and gas. It's just, you know, being an American today is really hard, I got to say. And, you know, I got to tell you that I spent Monday and Tuesday in the Sequoia National Forest, which I'd never been to before. And it's just staggeringly beautiful. You can't imagine how beautiful it is. You got to drive. I didn't know you had to drive up. I mean, it's really high elevation, 10, 12,000 feet. And this grove of trees, these sequoia trees are indescribable. And I literally spent, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours just sitting at the biggest tree in the world, the biggest living creature in the world, the General Sherman tree, watching mobs of Europeans walking by. And then I come out of the forest to read that Trump's idiots are now attacking the national park system. And, you know, I can see them just walking in there to this tree, cutting it down, and making Trump like a bathhouse. And these people are just so sick. And it really all stems right from our lack of democracy and the corruption of so much of our systems. Bob, we're going to run out of time, as I tend to do. Can you tell us how people might reference your upcoming report and who you're delivering it to and what the title is?
The initial draft they can get on Google Scholar and take a look at other things there, that including things I've written with you that are being cited. So we've had a tremendous amount of books that have picked up on some of the obvious stuff, like why don't we use, you know, open source software? And in fact, I don't know if I mentioned it early on, but James Woolsey of the CIA came out writing with a open source advocate in the New York Times and states the obvious. Why would we be using proprietary software? I mean, so CIA. A lot of it, he also came up with your conclusion that you actually need a paper ballot, even if you're using like an OptiScan, because you can't recount if there's no paper. If you're using the direct recording electronics, the DRE, I mean, all you're doing is re-pushing the same button and getting, you know, information spewed out without actually looking at real ballots, right? To have a real recount, you need to recount an actual ballot.
Well, did James Woolsey, former head of the CIA, begin his article by saying, based on my agency's experience in overthrowing elections all around the world, maybe it would be a good idea to use paper ballots here in the United States? That would be a great opening sentence for him.
It would have been, or the notion that, you want to have open source software that you can actually look at and is transparent, and you shouldn't let private companies, literally like Seidel, that are connected to CIA contractors, program the computers.
Right, right. It might be a good idea. And Kevin Camps, how do people get a hold of you, and what's your latest piece that you want people to see?
Yeah, our website is the best place. It's www.beyondnuclear.org. And I would just direct folks to look at our radioactive waste section, because the mobile Chernobyl bills are coming back at us. 44 states in the country would see high-level radioactive waste trucks, trains, and barges passing through over the course of 25 to 50 years. We're talking unprecedented thousands of shipments. So learn all about it, take action, contact your members of Congress, and let's stop this thing before it starts.
Yeah, and the Nova Chernobyl thing, you know, the centerpiece of the whole so-called strategy for dealing with nuclear waste in the United States coming from these commercial reactors is Yucca Mountain, which they want to revive. And I always want to remind people that the magic number to remember for Yucca Mountain is $96 billion, which is what they projected it to cost 10 years ago. God knows what it will be today. Bob, I also want to remind people you are the publisher or co-publisher with Suzanne Patzer of the Free Press, Columbus Free Press and freepress.org. And where much of your stuff is published, including our own strip and flip disaster of America's stolen elections. So we are almost out of time. But I got to say that this struggle in Ohio, which has been, you know, I have met John Kasich a couple times. Bob, he refused to debate you, which is really unfortunate. But he has come out against the subsidy, unlike Mario Cuomo Jr. in New York, who supported and has been supporting a $7.6 billion bailout, a Democrat supporting this massive bailout for nuclear plants in New York. The Republican governor of Ohio has come out against the bailout and for those two reactors. Give us a few choice words about that, Kevin Camps.
Yeah, Andrew Cuomo's sellout to the nuclear power industry. I mean, you know, to give him credit, he did do a lot of good work to get Indian Point to announce closure by 2021 at the latest. But the sellout, the raw political exchange to make that happen was the $7.6 billion bailout, all to the benefit of Exelon Nuclear, headquartered in Chicago, not in New York, which owns all four of those upstate reactors, which, as I mentioned earlier, are dangerously age-degraded, right on the shoreline of Lake Ontario, drinking water supply for many millions of people. So the real contradiction is, or the double standard, is that Cuomo said that, you know, What are folks in New York City supposed to do? Swim to New Jersey when Indian Point goes up in flames? Well, what are upstate New Yorkers supposed to do when one of those reactors goes up in flames? Swim to Ontario? Swim to Toronto? So that's
all right.
A most unfortunate trade-off.
Yeah, it's terrible. So I'm going to end with the most important thing, you guys. Who is going to pick up Colin Kaepernick? What's your prediction? Bob?
Baltimore.
Yeah, that's, they've been talking about that. Kevin?
I hope he moves to Canada and they beat all their NFL competitors.
Was there an
all right, buddy. Thank you so much.
It's
been a great hour.
Did we
evolve
from
Solartopia? Thank you, everybody.
Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.